Hello, world. No, it's not Dr. Greg Patton. It is I, Timothy Hill, sitting in for Dr. Patton for yet another day on the broadcast. Don't worry, he'll be back soon. But before then, we've got lots of news to discuss, like this. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signed a series of bills on Wednesday that ban vaccine mandates for public sector employees, require private businesses to adopt more exemptions to vaccine requirements, and prohibit school districts from requiring masks. This is all according to a Forbes article. DeSantis signed the package of bills during a news conference at Brandon Honda dealership in Brandon, Florida. And this was yesterday. Florida, here's what he says. Florida is leading. This is the strongest piece of legislation that's been enacted anywhere in the country in this regard. DeSantis and Republican lawmaker Anthony Sabatini pushed to ban employer vaccine mandates entirely during the special session on Thursday. However, the final bill passed by the legislature regarding the private mandates only requires companies to adopt more exemptions to any vaccine requirements. Any employer who does not comply with the law will be subject to a fine of $10,000 per employee if it has fewer than 100 workers, and $50,000 per violation if it has more than 100. Still much more work to be done on the bills that were supposed to totally ban private sector vaccine mandates. Those bills were badly watered down by Speaker Chris Sprouls. It could be Sproles, hard to say. But this is an important win in the meantime. That's what Sabatini said in a tweet. The bill also strengthens the state's prohibition on school mask mandates by prohibiting school districts from mandating masks. Another bill makes investigation into businesses accused of violating the new mandate law private until they've been completed. Democrats said the special session amounts to political theater meant to serve DeSantis's political ambitions, claiming the legislation is dangerous to the public and burdensome to businesses. Here's what Democrat State Representative Angie Nixon says. Does the bill truly attempt to keep Floridians safe, or was it crafted to kick off a presidential campaign for our governor? Separately, lawmakers passed a bill to strip the state surgeon general of his or her authority to mandate vaccinations. And Republicans also approved a bill directing the state to begin a withdrawal from the Federal Occupational Safety and Health Administration, that's OSHA for short, by January and develop a state-led replacement. How about that? Three GOP lawmakers demand answers on the FBI raid of Project Veritas. Three Republican lawmakers demanding information from the Department of Justice over the agency's raid of an apartment in New York associated with the conservative group Project Veritas. This according to Fox News. The raid was part of an ongoing investigation into how Ashley Biden, President Joe Biden's daughter, had her diary stolen and made public roughly 1 week before the 2020 presidential election. By the way, I'd like to note, this is where we are in politics in this country. My diary was stolen and it was made public. Again, sometimes I refer to politics as the 13th grade. Anyway, in a letter to Attorney General Merrick Garland, Representative Jim Jordan of Ohio, Representative James Comer of Kentucky, and Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin said the search warrant was apparently part of a grand jury investigation and should have been non-public, even though the New York Times published a story on the raid within an hour of when it happened. The court's order and the Times publishing of non-public Project Veritas information raises questions about whether any department employees leaked or contributed to the leak of any non-public information as part of the investigation. That is an official quote from the letter and the demand letter. The FBI raided Project Veritas founder James O'Keefe's home and those of his associates on November 6th. Jordan, Comer, and Johnson are ranking members of the House Judiciary Committee, and they are demanding answers because if it can happen to James O'Keefe and Project Veritas, without a doubt, it can happen to you. I hope they find answers, and I hope they are made public as well. We were in Florida, then we went to Capitol Hill. Let's stay on Capitol Hill for a second. Confirmation hearing goes bonkers after John Kennedy tells Biden nominee, "I don't know whether to call you professor or comrade." A hearing for the Senate Banking Committee went off the rails when Senator John Kennedy of Louisiana sparred with Chairman Sherrod Brown of Ohio, Republican versus Democrat, over the insinuation that Saul Amarova is a communist. Amarova, a law professor at Cornell University, need I say more, appeared before the committee for a hearing on her nomination by President Joe Biden to lead the office of the Comptroller of Currency. Her nomination has become the subject of controversy, however, because of her birth in the former Soviet Republic of Kazakhstan and her past publication of economic theories that promoted accusations of supporting nationalized control over banks, prices, and the free market. The Hill notes that Amarova has been an American citizen for more than 15 years and is a veteran of the George W. Bush administration. As the hearing got underway, Republicans accused Amarova of backing radical and socialist economic ideas, while Brown derided this line of thinking as Trumpism meets McCarthyism. When Kennedy got his turn to ask questions, he immediately focused on Amarova's involvement in a communist youth group. No communist here, nothing to see here, folks. Amarova explained that as a child growing up in the former Soviet satellite, everyone was a member of that organization, and that was part of normal progress in school. Kennedy continued his questions on whether she ever formally renounced the group, but Brown interjected to remind Kennedy she renounced her Soviet citizenship. From there, Kennedy ran through a number of written works and economic opinions Amarova expressed over the years. He finished by telling her, "You have the right to believe every one of these things. You do. This is America. But I don't mean any disrespect. I don't know whether to call you professor or comrade." And Kennedy's charge drew an audible gasp of, "Oh my goodness." And Amarova responded by telling him, "I'm not a communist. I do not subscribe to that ideology. I could not choose where I was born. I do not remember joining any Facebook group that subscribes to Marxist ideology. I would never knowingly join any such group." After Amarova finished speaking, Brown interjected again and retorted to Kennedy's previous accusation of repeatedly interrupting him at hearings. "And that's not true," is what Kennedy said. "I'm entitled to my questions." The melee spilled out from there as Kennedy accused Brown of breaking his entitlement to senatorial courtesy, while Brown accused him of conducting a character assassination. I wanted to share this devotion with you quickly. It's from LHM.org under the title of "Feeling Alone." And I could relate to this because it reminds me a lot of my son, who actually just had a birthday yesterday. He turned 6. His name is Hudson. But the devotion goes like this, Job 42:1-2. "Then Job answered the Lord and said, 'I know that you can do all things and that no purpose of yours can be thwarted. Oh, Jesus, it's an awful dark place down there. You better hold my hand,' said the little boy on the edge of the stairwell." Do you know that feeling? Of course, we all do. For some of you, the challenge is advancing age. So many of your friends and family have died, perhaps have all died, and you feel so alone. Some of you are isolated by health problems. You can't get out and do the things that you used to be able to do, the things you'd love to be able to do again. And some of you feel shunned. People who used to be good friends simply now avoid you. What do you do then? You may not know them, but they've turned their backs on you, and the loneliness can simply be painful. So many situations leave us feeling like that little boy standing all alone and peering down the steep basement steps into the darkness. Of course, you know you're not alone in your feelings. Many others have experienced these heartaches. For one, Job did. Once he had been healthy, but that had been taken away from him. The Bible tells us he had loathsome sores from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head, and he took a piece of broken pottery with which to scrape himself while he sat in the ashes. Job could also identify with you, you who are shunned by your friends, people who had respected him and sought him out in his heyday now just mocked him. And now I have become their song. I am a byword to them. They abhor me. They keep aloof from me. They do not hesitate to spit at the sight of me. And that's Job 30, 9 through 10. Job didn't feel like he was over the hill. He felt like he was being buried under it. He said, and this is a paraphrase, "And now my soul is poured out within me. Days of affliction have taken hold of me, and the pain gnaws me, takes no rest." How he longed for the good old days. That's what you may ask too. God, why is this happening to me? God often does not answer the question why. He didn't answer it for Job. He may not answer it for us either. But God does know our pain. In fact, that's why Jesus came, to bring us light, life, and forgiveness through his death on the cross and his resurrection from the grave. Jesus knows when we're so painfully alone. He knows when we say, "Oh, Jesus, it's awful dark down there. You better hold my hand." And guess what, my friends? He will. He will. Let's go back to Capitol Hill. McCarthy controls the House floor in hours-long attack on Biden's spending bill. Did you ever watch the film Mr. Smith Goes to Washington? Now, granted, this was on the House floor, but we all know that climactic scene in that film. That's how I imagine that this went down. The vote on U.S. President Joe Biden's $1.75 trillion social spending bill has been delayed in the House of Representatives after Republican House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy gave an hours-long speech. The vote was originally scheduled for Thursday evening after the Congressional Budget Office released a cost assessment of the bill, which several moderate Democrats said they needed before they would vote. But the vote was delayed until this morning after McCarthy spoke from a thick binder of prepared remarks for more than 4 hours, at times shouting over Democrats in the House who were openly dismissive of his obstruction. The Democrats in the House were attempting to advance Biden's $1.75 trillion domestic investment bill, despite the CBO's finding that it would add to the deficit. He started out by saying, "If I sound angry, I am. I'm just getting geared up, so just go sit. I know you don't like me, but that's okay." That's what he said several hours later. And at another point, he said the latter. "I've had enough. Americans have had enough," McCarthy added in a speech that cataloged a list of Republican grievances, some related to the bill, some to not. Dozens of Republicans, some sitting directly behind McCarthy, urged him on. Democrats, on the other side booed, and some tweeted snickering replies. Loved it, said Greg Pence, Republican from Indiana, of course the brother of Vice President Mike Pence. This is a historical moment for Kevin for sure. McCarthy broke House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's own speech-making record just before 5 a.m. on Friday. He ended about 5:10 a.m. The House voted 220 to 211 to approve the rule for debating the measure, clearing the way for a vote on the passage later in the night. No Republicans supporting the move. McCarthy was only occasionally interrupted by Democrats. Democratic Representative AOC Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez described in a video posted on social media as one of the worst, lowest quality speeches she had ever seen. It is stunning to me how long a person can talk while communicating so little, was her quote. Earlier, the CBO said the legislation would increase federal budget deficits by $367 billion over 10 years, although it acknowledged that additional revenues could be generated through improved IRS tax collections. That'll make you feel good. The CBO estimated that the new tax enforcement activities would generate a net increase in revenues of $127 billion through 2031. The White House estimates the change will generate $400 billion in additional revenue and said the bill overall will reduce the deficit by $121 billion. Let me just stop there for a moment. Remember, government itself has no money itself, right? It doesn't generate revenue. It collects taxes. And where does it get said taxes? From you and from me. That's where it gets its money. It does not get the privilege solely to print it. Sure, it can print because of the Federal Reserve. But that's not what it's talking about. When it says we're going to get $400 billion in revenue, it's talking about you. Not an ethereal, philosophical money from someplace. It's talking about you. And so not only do the American people, and I say not only the people under the sound of my voice, not only you and I, do we have to deal with inflation, but watch out, here come tax increase upon tax increase upon tax increase. And their argument, and it's the Democrat argument, well, it's just taxing the rich and they should pay their fair share. That's less people that are going to get hired. That's less wages that will be able to be paid. More into the government coffers, less into people's pockets, period. How about this? It's a transfer of power. President Joe Biden will briefly transfer power to Vice President Kamala Harris today when he undergoes a routine colonoscopy. Biden drove early Friday morning to the medical center in the Washington suburbs to Walter Reed for his first routine physical exam as president. Press Secretary Jen Psaki said Biden would be under anesthesia during the procedure and would transfer power to Harris. As was the case with President George W. Bush, had the same procedure in 2002 and 2007, and following the process set out in the Constitution, President Joe Biden will transfer power to the vice president for the brief period of time when he is under anesthesia. The vice president will work from her office in the West Wing during this time. Biden, age 78, has had his last full exam in December of 2019 when doctors found the former vice president to be healthy and vigorous and fit to successfully execute the duties of the presidency. Clearly, they were looking at his body and not his mind. That's just my perspective. I'm not a doctor. Biden is the oldest person to serve as president, and interest in his health has been high since he declared his candidacy for the White House in 2019. Well, I mean, clearly he's doing okay. He gets many naps, and you'd be doing great too if you got to nap multiple times a day and had a staff of hundreds to make sure you didn't make any mistakes, because he never makes any mistakes in public. Okay, sorry. Where is President Trump during this period in time? Well, J.P. Morgan backtracks on cutting ties with conservative group after outrage. J.P. Morgan Chase, the country's largest bank, has backtracked on a decision to cut ties with a Missouri conservative group that planned to host a political fundraiser featuring Donald Trump Jr. following backlash from officials. The Defense of Liberty Political Action Committee used WePay, a subsidiary of J.P. Morgan Chase, for ticketing on a December 3rd event in St. Charles, Missouri. However, on November 9th, which also happened to be my birthday, just in case you were wondering, but on my birthday, WePay suspended its services to the Missouri Political Action Committee, citing their terms of service, which prohibit processing for hate, violence, racial intolerance, terrorism, the financial exploitation of a crime, or items or activities that encourage, promote, facilitate, or instruct others regarding the same. In response, Missouri Treasurer Scott Fitzpatrick sent a stern letter to J.P. Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon, informing the bank that the state of Missouri would not do business with them so long as they continue to discriminate against customers based on their mainstream political positions. Fitzpatrick said WePay failed to elaborate on how the group or the scheduled event fell into these troubling categories, noting that it said its information was proprietary and their decision was final. Conservative views are supported by half the country and 60% of voting Missourians in the last election. That's what Fitzpatrick wrote in his letter to Dimon. He also noted in his letter that the group has its 10-year history hosted conservative speakers from a variety of backgrounds. Hate, violence, racial intolerance, and terrorism are antithetical to the mission of the Defense of Liberty organization and its founder, Paul Kirkman, who served our nation admirably in the Marine Corps. Separately, Senator Josh Hawley and Attorney General Eric Schmidt each wrote letters to Dimon on Thursday questioning WePay's decision to suspend services to the group. Reversing course, the bank told Fitzpatrick that it had conducted further review and determined that the Defense of Liberty Political Action Committee didn't, in fact, violate the terms of service. I'm Timothy Hill. I've been sitting in for the one and only Dr. Greg Patton. Thank you so much for joining in, listening to the broadcast, praying for Dr. Patton, praying for me as I guest host. I appreciate you, and we appreciate you, and I appreciate the opportunity to join in one more time. Hope you go out and have a great day, have a great weekend, and may God bless you all. Thank you.